Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, you're stuck with me because we're going to talk about car repair stuff and all of that other stuff. But before we do that, allow me to do something that I'd like to do, and that's tell you about good shops in the Valley area. Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and the oldest and the most trusted source for automotive services. Chuck opened it in 1982, and his son Derek now runs it. Their staff and mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill, which eliminates the unnecessary sale of parts and repairs. So if you're in Sun City, the only shop I can recommend is Auto Dynamics on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, that's where we start, and then we'll take your call and we'll handle your car questions. Now, those really hard questions, you might want to say, my wife and I have a dispute, and then you take whatever position you want, and that way, if I find for you, but you're really giving your wife's, then you can deal with the ramifications. Sitting next to me is Will. Will is a guy that's in the, what are these called, pacemakers? Pacemaker stuff. And Will has a big part in helping people and medical people determine what it is that someone needs. And so let's start with just what does the pacemaker, what's its primary job?
The pacemaker just is like a reminder to the heart that it's time to have a heartbeat.
Okay.
So it puts out a little bit of electricity. The patient does not feel it. It's very faint and very brief, but it's at the exact right timing.
Now, what happens if they're jogging and their heart needs to speed up?
Great question. It has a processor in there. It's called rate response. And it can tell, actually, when they're jogging. So the faster they're running, the faster the device will go. And in that category, rate response, there's many, many different sensors. But what most of the companies use right now is just it's a little pendulum, like what locks up your seatbelt.
Uh-huh.
It's something like similar to that inside the device. So it can tell how fast they're going.
Okay, so in a seatbelt, the seatbelt doesn't care and it's asleep until the minute you hit something, and when your body flies forward, the force of the body flying forward locks the seatbelt.
Yes.
And hopefully keeps your head away from the dash, the steering wheel, or the front windshield. So these can sense that kind of movement as well.
That's
or
right.
Jogging or running fast or something like that.
Yeah, that's one sensor. Others look at oxygen in the bloodstream.
Okay.
Another one can measure motion and emotion.
Okay.
There's a lot of different things, but most of them use the activity.
Okay, so if a guy's crying, what do you do with the pacemaker? Do you speed up his heart, or you just bring him down to normal and say, calm down?
I've never thought of that. If he's crying, it's probably a normal response. We'd probably leave it alone.
Okay, so there's no programming for that.
No.
You don't have a sensor on his mouth or in his eyes where tears are coming out, and you go, oh, he's crying.
No, but they do, these ones I mentioned with emotion, they sense dreams, REM sleep, nightmares. So
okay.
They'll actually go faster.
Whew. I could have used that a couple years ago when my wife was being real mean to me. I had nightmares about her stabbing me in the middle of the night and all that kind of stuff, or feeding me poison. So let's talk about the electrical capabilities, and I'm gonna translate those to cars today. So you have two of them here in front of me. One of them slightly bigger than a quarter, and the other one almost looks like the coaster for a small glass.
Yeah.
Okay. So the small one, give me the volts and the amps.
The small one, maximum, puts out 7 volts. We usually program it to around 2 volts.
Okay.
And what we're looking for with that, how low can we go and it still works?
Okay.
So we want to be under 1 volt. That's called the threshold.
Okay.
So you take that number threshold and double it. If the threshold's 1, we'll program it to 2. But it can go way up to 1 volt.
Okay.
And it also has another measurement called pulse width, and that's how long is that electricity on for.
Mm-hmm.
A nominal typical is like 0.4, 0.5 milliseconds.
Okay.
Very, very brief. The patient does not feel it.
That's a millionth of a second.
No, that's a thousandth.
Okay, a thousandth of a second.
Millionth would be a micro, but
okay.
This is a milli.
And see, we do that with injectors on cars.
Yeah.
At idle, it's just going, and then wide open throttle on my wife's car goes, it's a fire hose. So
well, that's one reason I'm here, Mark. I've listened to you for years and years, and I've thought I hear you say things, and I thought, that's very similar to what we do. We work with valves and wires and timing, and so do you guys.
So you want to open that door, do you? Okay. All right. We've had this age-old argument between the, and I'm going to use, and I'm not saying you're a doctor, but I'm going to use the doctors and mechanics. So we've had this age-old argument for a long, long time.
Okay.
So here's how it goes. The patient, I'm sticking up for auto mechanics. Your patient can talk to you.
Yes.
Ours can't.
Yes.
Until 1996 or early 90s when we put computers in. Now we can talk to the computer and it can talk to us. But this is back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. So the doctor's patients could talk and they could say, ouch, that hurts, or this is where my problem is. Cars don't do that. So that's one for the auto mechanics.
Agreed.
Okay?
Yes.
The second thing is the doctors say, well, we deal in life or death. All you deal in is a bad alternator. And my response is if I don't do your brake job right, then when you're hurtling down the highway at 70 miles an hour and you have no brakes, then why don't you tell me then that my job isn't related to life or death, okay?
Sounds like the mechanics are winning this one.
So far, we're 2-0, okay? They say, I want to see you do all your work when the engine's running.
Exactly.
We can't get past that. Why don't you change the spark plug when the engine's running?
Exactly.
Why don't you go fix
the valves.
Adjust the valve. Well, we do adjust the valves, but to replace the valve. That's one the mechanics can't win.
Yeah.
So they're working on somebody whose engine's running. And remind me, because that's why we're sitting here today. And here's the last one that I like. This is puts the technicians over the edge. We can take a sample of the tailpipe emissions, and we can tell you what's going on under the hood. Doctors can't.
I had a mechanic, a motorcycle mechanic in Vietnam that could tell me that. I had two motorcycles in Vietnam, and this Vietnamese mechanic had hardly any equipment, but he would bend over and he'd listen to the motor, and then he'd put his fingertips by the exhaust and he would smell it. And he would tell me what was wrong with it. These are little one-cylinder Hondas.
Right.
But the guy was very good.
Well, and to his, carbon monoxide smells, it's an obvious smell. The car's running really rich. It's bellowing black smoke out the tailpipe. And anybody who's been in this industry for any length of time can smell it. Now, there's a sweet spot as you screw this screw in to shut the fuel down slowly. You get to a point where you go from very rich, too much fuel, to not enough fuel. Okay, and then we go into what we call lean condition. That creates oftentimes a smell as well. One of them can oftentimes smell like rotten eggs. So I agree with you. He was way before his time.
Yes.
For him to reach down, and I'm sure he didn't stick his nose in the tailpipe, but he probably cupped his hand and redirected the smell towards his nose.
Probably.
And you don't do that for very long because you probably won't weather that storm, but the whole idea is we do just exactly that. Now we do a variety. We do hydrocarbons, carbon monoxide, oxygen, NOx, and those together kind of tell us what's going on underneath the hood.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're running really rich and your carburetor's flooding, then we're going to see a high CO, which is going to drive the HC with it. If we have a misfire, we're going to see high HC, but it doesn't affect the CO. So we're looking at all this. If the car's overheating and the timing's way off, then the NOx, the NOx, is going to be off. So I can win the tailpipe stuff with the medical field because they can't tell us what's going on further forward from the tailpipe. So in my opinion, it's 3-1. Okay, you don't have to agree with that because you work around doctors all your life. But that's the way it's been for a long time.
You have an advantage over me. You've been thinking about this issue for years and years.
No, I've been thinking.
I'm just now beginning to.
No. And in the next hour and 15 minutes, if you get to a point where you say, I've got something. But I've had this conversation with lots of medical people. It's not something that I bring up, but it's kind of like, well, you know, all you do is work on cars. That starts it. You know, all you do is work on cars. Oh, what are you, a gynecologist? You know what I mean? It's just, it changed when cars started talking to us. We couldn't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So today, I'm quite sure you're in the same way with your pacemakers. You're going to do something and wait for a response, and you hope the response is what you wanted it to do. And if it's outside of a parameter, then you know you need to continue to adjust more or less.
No.
Okay?
No.
When you put those in, you set them right there, and you don't change them?
It's better than that. This is artificial intelligence. Maybe we could get to this one later. What we're looking at is the defibrillator.
Okay.
The defibrillator has a pacemaker built inside of it.
Okay.
So it's two units in one. But this can tell if it's making a mistake.
Okay.
The old defibrillators, for example, let's say somebody is walking, and then they start walking fast, and maybe their heart rate goes to 100. This thing can double count, and it takes that 100, doubles it to 200, and it says, oh, VTAC, I'm going to give them a shock.
Okay.
And it gives a huge jolt, 700 volts, knocks you on your can. The newer ones have artificial intelligence. They can tell that that is not VTAC, it's exercise. And it does it by a number of ways. There's a lot of algorithms in there. And to me, one of the coolest things about them is if this is seeing VTAC at a certain rate, say 150 beats a minute, it's going to try to break it. It's going to try to stop that. We don't want to give that great big shock.
Right.
We want to do something before that. So if he's at 150, we'll try to go a little faster, 152, 157, 160, something like that.
Using the electronics to stimulate the heart to where you want it to beat.
Yes. This is already all built in there. So it tries program one, program two, program three. Finally, maybe program four worked. We're maybe pacing at 170, but that bad beat goes away. He goes back into normal rhythm, which we call sinus, and the device relaxes. But next time the patient has that same VTAC at that same rate, that 152, the device remembered it. He says, I remember this from last time. I'm not going to go through 1, 2, and 3. I'm going to start off with program number 4.
Okay.
And if that works, that's great. If it didn't work, it goes through the others. If none of that works, then it steps in with a big shock.
Okay. I'm going to rotate your heads up like this.
Okay. Great.
And I'm going to take a break, but the car, in a real sense, does the same thing. It has memory. And it knows what altitude it's in. It knows the moisture of the air. It knows all that kind of stuff. Now, it's not a geographical thing. But the last time this person accelerated, this is what I saw on the throttle. So I'm going to do this and fuel delivery and spark advance and all that kind of stuff. When the knock sensor says, yahoo, we got a problem, there's a ping in the engine. Then the computer goes, okay, well, I've been trained to knock down the timing first, check for fuel pressure, because a lean condition can cause this symptom. A timing issue can cause this symptom. An EGR not working can cause this system. So the computer goes through this algorithm to find out where the problem's at. The problem with cars is this. Even though the computer says that it's got an EGR code, that just means that the code is between the belly button and the ears. You still got to go find it. Mm-hmm. You still got to go, why did you say this? 602-508-0960. If you're a doctor, don't bother calling, because we're not going to take your call anyway, because I don't want to argue with you. I'm just teasing. If you want to call, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. So welcome back, everybody. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark. And Will is sitting here next to me, and Will is a gentleman who programs and sets up and helps people in need of pacemakers and defibrillators. Now, the pacemaker keeps the heart at a particular area of control, but the defibrillator is when you're looking like you're going to go south, this thing wakes you up, right?
Yep.
Close enough. Hold on. I got to push your button, and then I'll be getter. Okay.
How's that testing?
Yeah, that's okay. I'm just going to fix this and bring this down there. And how about that?
Okay.
All right. Good. Let me tell you about Kurtz Automotive real quick. Kurtz is a good guy. I've known him for many, many years. He's been around since 1987, working on domestic and import cars, gas and diesel. Domestic, import, gas and diesel. Has ASC certified technicians. Many of them are master techs, which is the highest level you can obtain. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Bell, Kurtz Automotive is a good place to start. If you don't have a shop, go in for an oil change and see how they treat you. We're going to go to the phones real quick. Heather, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2012 Dodge Caravan minivan, and I'll just start out by saying my husband is an auto mechanic. and I can't get him to look at my car. Last night, started having all these issues. By the way, his truck is in mint condition, beautiful, runs like the day that we bought it. But my minivan's having some issues. Is that something you think you could maybe help me with?
No, I think I can help you in another way.
Yeah, what's that?
I think I know who you're talking about. I think I have a control over your husband. I think he might work for me, and if he does work for me, then and I would disagree with you that his trucks always run great. That's not necessarily the case that they always run great. But I can tell you that unequivocally, here's the plan. Okay, you know where his truck keys are at. Take them and hide them on Sunday. Don't give them up for any reason. And then he has to bring your minivan to work. Then I'm going to talk to the service riders. They're going to write an emergency repair on it, and that will force them to get it fixed. But then when we're done, we're going to put on Allen's draws.
Okay.
Is that okay?
I like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah, Heather is my daughter-in-law. and so I know that she's talking about my son, and he's a procrastinator. He does have trucks that run nice, but they're not always running nice. So Heather, hide the keys, make him take the minivan to work, and here's what you could do too. When he goes out into the garage to get into the minivan, hide your camera and get a picture of him driving your minivan. That would be something I would pay for.
The best thing is going to be when he does drive it. The windshield wipers are going all the time now. It's possessed. Something happened to it last night, and I think it's probably electrical is my guess. But literally the windshield wipers go, all the buttons, all the dashboard lights are blinking and buzzing at me. And, the speedometer, I'll be driving and it just goes down to zero. The air conditioner cuts out.
And we can handle all that, but you can also say, do this if you want. You can go outside and disconnect the negative cable first. It's going to take a 5/16 wrench. You with me?
Yes. I'm not going to do it right now. But.
Okay, whenever. Then you're going to take the positive cable off. Okay?
Okay.
Then you're going to just let it sit there for 30 minutes. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Don't be scared because I'm not going to feed you the wolves. But if you take the two battery cables and touch them together, the cables, not the battery terminals, the cables, touch them together. That discharges all the electricity. Wait for an hour. Put the cables back on. Remember, positive first. So at the very beginning, negative is the one that comes off first, but when you put them back on, positive is the first one. So you put positive on, then negative, and I'll bet a lot of your problems will go away. I'm just guessing, but I'm betting.
Okay.
Okay, good luck, Heather. Thank you very much. Let's get another call because Stephen's been waiting. Stephen, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2013 Hyundai Tucson Limited at 145,000 miles on it. And 2 years ago, the AC failed. It kind of worked here and there, but then I just had a guy come and replace it. And now, about a month and a half ago, it worked. Kind of strange. It works about 10 minutes after the car's running, and then I travel a lot, so every 10 minutes, 12 minutes, I have to push the AC button and push it again, and then I'll get cold air again.
Okay.
And that happens all during the day, every day.
Okay. Well, there's a low-pressure switch and a high-pressure switch, and if the low gets below low, then it turns off the compressor, and if the high gets high, it turns off the compressor. When you push the button off and say the air conditioning take a break, the two levels in the low side and the high side, the low side is usually about 20, 30, and the high side can be 200 or 300. So the two of them will level out, so that will reset both the low-pressure switch and the high-pressure switch, so when you go back on, it'll often come back on for some short period of time. So somebody has to go in and find out, are we low on refrigerant, that's the low-pressure switch, or are we? Is the high-pressure switch screaming and disconnecting the compressor because the electric cooling fan has gone bad, or because we have a problem with the air conditioning compressor? So there has to be a little bit of diagnosis. But what did they do? Cover real quick for me what you had done last. Did they do a compressor and a major $800 to $1,000 ticket?
Yeah, so, you know, I did use that service, my mechanic. So they came and I purchased, you know, an OEM AC unit, and they put it in at the house.
Okay.
And then refilled it with refrigerant.
Okay. Well, I don't like that plan, and I'll be real blunt about it. If he was really good, he'd be working for me for $50,000 to $100,000 a year. Number two, he sells you on the idea that you pay extra for an OEM, and there is no such thing as OEM. Every single box and every single part in every single car came from some subcontractor in Taiwan, Singapore, somewhere in China. So okay. Everything in a Ford box, Chevrolet box, everything, there is no such thing as a company that makes your alternator or your air conditioning compressor. It's going to be Hitachi or Denso was going to make your compressor.
Okay.
So this is his to deal with. So I think you should call him back and say, I've got this little problem. I'd like you to stop by. I'd like to demonstrate it. So I'm going to take you for a ride. And I'd like to demonstrate what it is. It's a problem I didn't have before, if that's the truth.
But
this is his to deal with because he technically gave it to you. So it's entirely possible that he made a mistake somewhere and that's causing this problem. You also are polite and nice, and then you say to him at the end, well, you can't fix it or you don't know what it is, so I'm going to get it fixed, and then you and I will sit down and discuss what we're going to do to, if I need to be paid back because this problem was created by you, then you and I will talk about how we're going to handle that. But thank you very much. So set the groundwork for that nice, genuine conversation. But I am not a fan of
it. 2 years?
What's
years
that?
Later, I can have it. 2 years later, I can still have that.
No, that throws a whole new kink into it. That 2 years later, then no, huh? You can still ask him, but he can say no. Got to run Steven, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock it is. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Will. Will is involved in defibrillators and pacemakers. And it's a job that you've done for how many years?
Over 25.
Okay. And it was interesting that I ask you if I need a medical doctor, and I'm going to assume that you know the best because you work around it.
Yeah.
You know the ones that are kind of new, and you know the ones that have gray hair and have been around the block that are set in their ways versus the gray-haired guy that's been around the block that's open to new technology.
Right.
And so then I ask you, what doctor should I use? And you said that that's the biggest question you get on a regular basis.
Yes.
So, folks, if you have that question, then you email me your information, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com, and I'll pass your information on to Will, and he'll talk to you about, and here's what I say, this is who I would want working on my mother, my wife, my kids.
Or me.
Okay, you can say that, or me. So anyway, and that's a nice thing to do because you're kind of in the trenches. You've been around the block. You've seen these evolve from Fred Flintstone time and to this Microsoft, Apple kind of situation we have now. So anyway, talking about good shops again and talking about guys that are really good, Strictly Diesel is Strictly Diesel, except if you have a car, he'll change oil in it, rotate your tires in it. So if it's a gas car and you got a diesel, then you're a customer of his. They're really good at providing the best service and getting the job done right. You see, their diagnostic skills in diesels is second to none. They're very good at what they do. Foreign domestic light diesel trucks. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and they're open Monday through Friday. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. And Nate is a guy that once you meet him, you'll understand why Mark Salem thinks he's a great guy. And Gil, who might be on the phone?
We have Sam.
Sam, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning. Hey, I got a minivan with a cooling problem.
I put a new radiator in a couple years ago, and at that time I put a fail-safe thermostat, kind of if it fails, it stays open. But anyway, when I'm driving around town moving, temperature's great. When I come to a stop, it starts getting up into the hot area. I put Kleenexes in front of the two factory electric fan areas in front of the radiator, and they're being sucked in really good. So could it be the thermostat or water pump?
Well, let me ask you some questions. I want you to describe the gauge to me. Is it a gauge where the needle is at 12 o'clock and that's in the middle of the normal zone? Describe the gauge to me. Okay. Now, does it have a mark in the middle, or is there a mark at 5/8?
Oh, there's mark. It has a C on the far left, and then the far right, it has an H.
Right.
It has a red one. So there's marks all along the way. So normally it's in the middle, and that's still white. And then if you go 3/4, that's still white. But right after 3/4, it starts to get red.
Okay. I want to know where the gauge is that causes your concern. Where's the needle on the gauge that causes your concern?
Oh, more than 3/4 in the red.
It's in the red.
Comes back down.
It's in the red. And forget about anything else. The needle is in the red when you come to a stop.
Yeah, after a minute or two at a stoplight.
But when you get going again, and as you're moving down, hold on, I got some questions for you. When you get going again, does the needle come back down to the halfway mark or perhaps the 5/8 mark?
Halfway.
Okay. When you go faster and you're on the freeway at 70, 80 miles an hour, how is it there? So is the needle at half or just slightly higher?
Halfway.
Okay. The reason I'm asking you these questions is they're very important to me. So if you got a plugged up radiator, the faster you go, the hotter it's going to get. That's why I'm asking you these questions. And so the only time you have a problem is when you come to a stop, and the only difference between stopped and driving down the road is airflow across the radiator. So you've eliminated the electric cooling fans, but I suggest that those are more than likely not the problem. And the problem has to be, it's going to have to be tested, and we're going to have to make sure that the sensors that turn on the fans are capable of turning on the fans, and we're going to have to make sure that the fans are working. Sometimes we will just simply bypass the fans, run the fans all the time, and say to you, hey, Sam, how's that? And you go, perfect. But it is okay for it to go from from half to 5/8, or from half to 3/4, and stay out of the red. It's okay for it to come get hot when you stop because we no longer have the airflow across the radiator. So it's not uncommon for a car with electric cooling fans to sit between half and 3/4 as long as the needle doesn't go into the range of red. Is the red after the 3/4 mark or is it before the 3/4 mark?
Right up the 3/4 mark.
Okay.
So it's getting in past that.
Okay. It's in the red. You need to have it dealt with because this could cause you problems. The issue is that I've not seen one that way. Usually the red mark's up at the 7/8 mark. And I tell people all the time, I want your car to run between half and 3/4. That is the industry standard. So if your gauge is just different, it's okay because you have, it's your car and I don't know what the gauge looks like.
It could be more the 5/8. It could be more the 5/8 now you mention it, but it's definitely getting the red.
Okay. And it cools off, I bet, quickly when you get going?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, airflow across the radiator. It's that simple. Airflow across the radiator. Thanks, Sam. Good luck to you. I think we need to concentrate on the fans. If anything, maybe run them all the time and see if that makes a difference. And if it does, then we have to figure out which one or what's going on. They both have sensors and they both have motors. So you got four different places of concern. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You're welcome to give us a call. I'm Mark Salem. It's 40 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we'll be back right after this. If you have a car question or a car problem, then you're welcome to join us. Will, last week there was a gentleman that called and wanted to know if he could put helium in his tires and he'd get better fuel economy. And his hypothesis was is the helium in the tires would lift the car off the road just a little bit, which would mean less friction on his tires. You can't imagine how many emails I got on that. Some of them aren't fit for radio waves, and some of them are really kind of tough to deal with. And there was some nice people. But one of the other conversations we had was about nitrogen in your tires. Okay.
I heard part of that.
Okay. And nitrogen is 80% of what comes out of your mouth. You know that. And so these machines, we've tested these machines. And they're incapable of anything better than 95. So we're going to move you from 80 to 95. So this gentleman who owns a helicopter company sends me an email about this. And we're talking nitrogen now. Mark, listen to you often, including today, but not every day because my wife won't let me. Just wanted to comment on nitrogen in the tires. And I had said that the part of the hook on nitrogen in your tires is because they use it in airplanes and because NASCAR uses it.
Oh.
So those are the two reasons you should use it in Grandma Moses' minivan. So I don't like that because there's no analogy there between NASCAR and jet engines. But he writes this. The reason we use nitrogen in aircraft tires is strictly convenience because nitrogen is supplied in such a high-pressure bottle. It can be used to service hydraulic accumulators. Now, an accumulator will do two things. It'll do, if you fill it full of nitrogen, it does a, B, and then if you bleed the nitrogen off, it does A. So you're using a high-pressure gas to make stuff happen. Otherwise, we'll use an accumulator to drop the landing gear, which you hope the pilot does before he takes down and hits the road. So he says, we're going to use nitrogen because it has high pressure to service hydraulic accumulators and other components on an airplane since the tires are already serviced above 200 PSI. Well, again, we don't have the ability. If my compressor only runs at 110 or 130, I can't put 200 pounds in the tire. So they use nitrogen because the bottles have 2000 PSI in it. So I don't like nitrogen. I called it a reoccurring sales opportunity. RSO. It's you come in with the little green caps on your tires. We're gonna make a big deal about, oh, Mrs. Jones, you were 3 pounds low on the right rear. Good thing we caught that. Yeah, 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 yeah. But, Mrs. Jones, I noticed your odometer's at 60,000 miles, and you're due for a complete fluid change. And Mrs. Jones says, well, gosh, Mark, how much is that? Well, it's on special right now for $1,300. So that's my opinion. And our industry is not perfect, but neither is your industry. I mean, we make mistakes. And
absolutely.
You and I got on this conversation because you complimented me about, I told everybody that we wiped out a motor on an engine.
Yes.
We wiped out an engine on a customer's car. We forgot to put oil in it.
Right.
I make a joke about that. Well, how long will a Honda Pilot go without oil? And the answer is 16 miles. So, and no one would believe that, but that's how far we towed it back after the motor was blown up at 16 miles. So you said something nice. You said it's not very often that people admit stuff like that. And in your industry, I guess that might be kind of hard as well?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So everybody that makes a mistake, do they just point fingers at someone else?
Pretty much, especially the surgeons.
Okay. And so
it's never the surgeon's fault.
Yeah. Well, in our industry, there's a lot of those kinds too. But I think the issue with me personally is my guys, and then the next question from the radio listeners are, what happened to the tech? Well, in the story, I said that he's been with me 31, 32 years. He's a great tech. He makes mistakes, but so do I. I mean, my wife made a mistake 46 years ago when she married me, and I was 10 at that point, and she was quite a bit older. But the idea, I'm dead meat when I get home. You know that, don't you? And so we all make mistakes, but I'm not trying to thump my chest and say I put a new motor in it. I'm just saying we do make mistakes. But I'm also saying it's real easy for us to know whose mistake it is.
Yep.
So if we didn't touch your tires and your wheels, and we didn't take the tires and wheels off to check your brakes, and all you brought it in for was to flush the cooling system, and then the right rear tire falls off the next day, it's not ours. Now, it could be ours if that car was misdirected. So I sent it to your bay and told you to rotate the tires. Then I recovered and say, oh, that's not. It's a cooling system flush.
Uh-oh.
but you got the lug nuts loose but didn't put them back. That's why we have security cameras all over the shop.
Really?
So we can tell that. So anyway, so he talks about, and this is a part I really like. We use nitrogen instead of rolling out a high pack or high pressure air compressor because the bottle it comes in already has 2,000 PSI in it. And you are, as always, completely spot on. N2 is not the cheapest compressed gas air available. It is the cheapest since it's a waste from gas fractioning process. I don't know what that means, but he says it's pretty cheap. So that means something to me. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. In Mesa, there's only one shop that I can put my name next to, and that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street. He's just east of Stapley, the south side of the road. Brian and Thelma both come from families who came from gasoline sales and auto repair in the late 50s and the early 60s. These young people have been around gasoline and seen their dad eat dinner with grease in their fingernails since they were little. So Brian and Thelma both have families like that, and the two of them know right from wrong. So if you're in Mesa, unfortunately, the only place I can send you is to Thompson's Auto Repair, and that's on Main Street just east of Stapley. And Gil, you got somebody else?
Yes, we have Richard.
Richard, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, Mark.
You bet.
I have a 2007 Toyota Camry with about 110,000 miles on it, and I'm having nothing but problems.
Okay.
The gauges are going crazy. My speedometer flip back and forth, and I keep the speed. My ABS light goes on. My oil light goes on. The brake light goes on, and the brake's not on. Sometimes it lasts a while. Sometimes it goes off.
Okay, what's been recently done to it?
Well, I took it in, and they put in a they tested and everything. They said I needed a new alternator and battery. And they put them in.
Okay. Did it make any difference?
Maybe a little, but not much. It's still doing it.
Okay. And can why can't you just go back in and ask them to say, you know what, you sold me this as a fix, and it's really not a fix. So can we start with some kind of a credit on the alternator and battery, and then let's move forward? Because the thing you forgot to do is you forgot to say, you're going to fix my problem, right? I mean, this is a diagnosis, and this is a fix. This isn't a guess, because I want to know if you're guessing, and if you're guessing, whose money we guessing with, yours or mine? That's a perfectly acceptable conversation to have with the person in front of you.
Oh, I like that a lot. I did take it into another dealer that was recommended to me in Tempe.
Uh-huh.
And they have it right now.
Okay. I think you have a bad connection somewhere. Let me ask you a question or two. Do the headlights ever change intensity?
No.
Did you ever have a problem starting the car?
No.
Okay. I don't know why they put an alternator battery in it, because that doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. You never had a problem with the battery being dead. You never have any kind of an intensity with the headlights. You would know that. It would be very obvious if you did that. All you've got is an intermittent electrical storm that's going on with no rhyme or reason. And I think you're probably going to dig it down to a module that's gone crazy. And let me give you an example. On my way down here, I came from Payson this morning. I was testing the computer in my car, and it won't let you make any seat adjustments until you're in park. So I thought, I'll just put the transmission in neutral, because I know it's watching the shifter. And I'll put it in neutral and see if I can then change the seat of my car, of my seat, because I wanted to change it. And it wouldn't let me. So then, when I got into town, I put it in neutral, and I started decreasing speed, thinking at 10 or 15 or 20, I could still beat this monster. And that son of a gun will not let me change the seats until I'm in park. That's all there is to it.
Wow. Wonder why.
Well, it's because it doesn't want me fiddling around with the seat while I'm supposed to be driving down the highway at 50, 60, 70, 80 miles an hour. So, and many of the new cars have those kinds of safety devices in there. And I'll tell you something else. When you go to cancel the cruise control, there's two ways to cancel it. You can apply the brake, which means the computer's watching the brake pedal. As soon as that bulb shines, it's canceling your cruise. You know how else you can do your cruise? Your cruise sticks. You just throw it in neutral, because once you throw it in neutral, it cancels your cruise as well. So the cruise control module is looking at both the shifter position and it's looking at your brake pedal, and that's how it makes your cruise control work. I'm glad that you went to the Tempe dealership. I have respect for them, and I think that they have the best chance of figuring this out. But on the first one, keep your receipt, and I would put I'd put the first shop on notice that you have the same problem and you've taken it somewhere else. And then, I mean, if you want to play hardball, you can just stop payment on whatever the check or whatever on the credit card. But I think you should give them an opportunity to look at the repair. And what's really cool is you go back and you say, I've had this car on the road for 20 days and the problem is solved. Here's a copy of the repair order that solved it. Here's a copy of your repair order for an alternator and a battery you said would solve my problem. I'd like very much to talk about your bill, and I would like to afford you the opportunity to issue me a credit for work that didn't move me forward.
I like it very much.
I like it when people do that to me.
I hope it works. It does.
I mean, what's the other option? You're going to go in there and raise hell at the front counter. And you're going to call first, and they're going to say no. And then you're going to go into the lobby. You're going to raise hell. You're going to turn around, tell everybody in the lobby that, you know, Mark Salem's an idiot, and he doesn't know what he's talking about. And don't let him put an alternator and a battery in your car because it doesn't fix it. Where this guy fixed a bad ground on the exhaust manifold, and he charged me $80, and he charged me $400 for an alternator. This is the kind of dance that people do in the lobbies. Now,
he doesn't have many people in the lobby, so that doesn't matter. He's got a small shop, the guy he took it to in Fountain Hills, and the guy he took it to is Arizona Imports, and he seemed to know a lot more.
Okay. Okay, I wish you hadn't said anything. We're going to blurb that out anyway. But
please do.
Okay, it's. I think you're better served by just getting a second pair of eyes on it, because clearly he missed it. So. Alrighty, and I would like something from you. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Would you send me what finally fixes this? Just give me an email, Mark@MarkSalem, because I want to learn from your malady. So that's what I'm really after is what did they fix? So the next time somebody calls and says that the Camry's hooting and hollering, and every time you honk the horn, black smoke comes out the tailpipe, I'll have something to go on. So thank you very much for that, Richard. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to load the lines. We've got five lines open. And what's the name of the board op I've got today?
Abigail.
Oh, Abigail. I think he said Abigail, but it may have been Gil. I'm just teasing him. Gil's one of the best board operators I've ever had. He's a really great guy. 602-508-0960, and he'll get you in, and we'll get you on. We've got another hour of car talk, and you're always welcome to join us. If the lines are busy, then just wait until I handle somebody and then dial back, and you can get it done. Every Saturday, we're here talking about cars, and if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, I can give you a number that's kind of easy to remember, 888. And don't forget, this is KKNT0960. So it's 888-960-9696. Toll free. If you can hear my voice, it's toll free. 888-960-9696. So we talked with Heather today that had a minivan that had all kinds of problems, but come to find out, she's married to my son. And so we're going to put him on probation Monday morning until he fixes his wife's car. It's a sad state of affairs when she has to call her father-in-law to get her car fixed. And if he wasn't so doggone big, I'd spank him, but that might be a fight that I'm going to lose. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we've got another hour on the car show, so if you have a question or a comment about your car, something you really like or you don't like, or some option you didn't get and you wish you would have, or an option that they offered you but you're not quite sure if it's good enough or what it does, all that kind of stuff we can handle. If you've got a particular problem with your car, then we talk symptoms. So year, make, and model of the car, the miles, and then tell me what it's doing, and I'm going to ask you questions. So that give and take is an important part of this. Sitting next to me is Will. Will is in the defibrillator and the pacemaker with respect to people's hearts. And he was just pointing out, we have one of them sitting on the counter right now. He was pointing out that on the defibrillator,
both of them,
when something happens that's not normal. This will call the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Can I also have them call my wife?
Yes.
I mean,
there's a phone number.
Yeah, okay. So there's two phone numbers. Call my wife and call the doctor and say, hey, he just took the defib said I just had to restart his heart or I had to help him level it out.
Yep.
So then the doctor, what's he going to do?
Depending on the situation, he might tell him to go into the ER
okay.
or call 911.
Okay. And then so at that point, this guy's sleeping or this lady's sleeping. She doesn't even know that
That's
happened.
Possible, yeah.
And so he's saying, but we got a crash on the horizon, so we need you to come into the hospital so we can figure out what's wrong. So this is kind of a black box for the person's heart. Both of these are kind of like a black box that we have in cars and in airplanes.
Oh, I see, yeah.
That tell you historically what's going on. Now, they're not capable of... Yours have algorithms that are capable of future diagnosis or future history?
Future history?
No, future... what might happen in the future based on what's happened in the past.
No, we don't go that far yet.
Okay. So, but he knows something from this point backwards is bad.
Yes.
Okay. We have airbags, modules, black boxes that do the same thing.
Oh.
Once the airbag pops or once you have a tremendous deceleration, once there's something that happens, then the computer knows when to throw the airbag.
I see.
So the delta V is the instantaneous loss of speed. So if you're driving down the road at 40 miles an hour and you hit a telephone pole, you go from 40 to zero real quick. In that blink of an eye, the airbag module causes the airbag to pop and hopefully saves you from having this steering wheel in your mouth.
The difference with these is they'll actually call the doctor, so it'd be calling Dr. Salem and say, hey, Dr. Salem, the airbag just went off.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. And actually, some of the newer model cars have that.
Mm-hmm.
They have the ability to call for help
mm-hmm.
in the event that you're incapacitated.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all kinds of stuff. The part of that I don't like for cars is they're also keeping track of you, and they're also mm-hmm. monitoring you and
mm-hmm.
your driving habits. And there's a couple of insurance companies that literally have you plug something under
I've
the dash.
Seen that, yeah.
And they're going to set your premiums based on
yes.
your driving habits.
I'm out of that equation then.
I'm never having that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you might have your grandkids put on that.
Right.
You know, but you're not going to have your wife or yourself. You're not going to have anybody. I mean, all of us every once in a while put the throttle to the floor to pass somebody.
Absolutely.
So you're going to set. And then this is a true story. We ordered some parts from my wife's car, and they had to come from the dealer. So they asked us for the VIN number. So the VIN number was given, and we got the parts. Later, through the entertainment system, this person came on and said, hey, Mrs. Salem, how are you doing? We're right around the corner from you, and we noticed that you're due for a service, and we'd like to be your place.
Oh, boy.
So you know what we're doing now?
Taking it out.
Well, we've already fixed that part. But I need to give them the VIN number to identify the parts in the car. There's the last six digits or what we call a sequence number. Mm. What number did the car come off the list? So we're just scrambling those last six digits. So now the guy in North Dakota gets the marketing crap that we don't our customers are going to be out of that loop. So it's a matter of always it's a gamemanship with new computerized cars today. Gil, you got somebody?
I do not.
Okay, well then find somebody, would you? In the meantime, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or car problem, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange is down on 40th Street in Washington. He was there when Washington was a dirt road. Phil's been in this business for a very, very long time. This facility's been up since 1968. And they are transmission diagnostic and repair experts all the way from test driving your car to fixing leaks to taking the transmission apart and perhaps fixing something inside or completely rebuilding the whole unit. It just depends on what you find in there. If you find the oil pan has a half an inch of ground up metal, then there's nothing inside there that we want to use again. So automatic transmission exchange, we fondly all call it ATE, 40th Street in Washington. Good place to go, good guy to go to, and he's honest and he's dependable. We were talking about nitrogen in the tires, and I didn't read the last paragraph right, but one of the reasons why this gentleman says they use nitrogen in airplane tires is because they need 200 pounds of pressure, and we don't have that kind of pressure in my shop. So we have to have an auxiliary machine if we were going to sell nitrogen. Number two, he also talks that nitrogen is cheap compressed gas since it's waste from the gas fractioning process. So evidently when they're doing their magic to make stuff, nitrogen is a byproduct of that process. So we were talking about nitrogen in your tires and the benefit of that, and I don't believe in that, and I don't sell nitrogen. I think it's a, you know, I personally think it's a scam. I think it's just a waste of time, and it's a feel-good thing. Mm-hmm. We're going to put nitrogen in your tires. They're going to run cooler. You're going to get better fuel economy. You're going to bounce off curbs. And if you're drunk and you hit another car, at least the tires won't go flat so you can run from the cops. Now, that's an exaggeration, as you well know. but at the end of the day, it's kind of the way I feel. The nitrogen is just not a great idea. Anyway, when you talk about car repair, we were talking about that one gentleman who had some work done, and then it didn't fix it, and the battery and alternator had to be in the $300 or $400 range.
Yeah.
The diagnostic, then the battery installation plus the battery, the alternator installation plus the alternator, and then on top of that, we're going to do a bunch of testing on the front side, and then a bunch of testing on the back side. You're kind of playing the odds. If you have something that's a malfunction, it's entirely possible it is a battery or it is an alternator, but usually there's other symptoms that go along with that. The alternator light glows bright red, or glows red but not bright red, or it flickers, or sometimes I hit the key and it doesn't start, and sometimes I hit the key and it does start. Those are kind of common symptoms for batteries and alternators. But every time I get in the car and shut the door and buckle my seatbelt and I hear a rooster clucking, then you're going to have to figure that out. That, there's nothing in our books that says why you're underneath your hood you're going to have a rooster that's clucking. So you're going to have to figure that out yourself. But those are some of the things that are difficult for us to fix. But what's not difficult for us to do is diagnose your car. And there's three answers. I don't know. I can't find it. I found it. I know what it is for certain. And the third one is you have to wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Mm-hmm. I can't duplicate it. You can't duplicate it. All we can do at this point is guess. So if you want me to guess, I'll guess, but I'm guessing with your money. So if you want me to guess with an alternator and a battery, I'm happy, but I'm not going to refund you the money. I'm not representing this as a fix. I'm representing it as the result of a discussion that you, Mr. Customer, and I have had, and you understand that no one knows what this is, and you can't duplicate it, therefore I can't test it. So you've agreed to this would be a good way to go. So that's kind of how car repair actually works. Just recently, there was a couple of two large chain shops that were purchased by some investment bankers. Historically, when that happens, when you buy, let's use a different thing. Let's use a dental clinic. So somebody comes up and buys 30 dental clinics and pays millions of dollars. They're probably historically going to raise the price a little bit to go ahead and make more profit to help pay for the huge investment they have. They'll keep this, apparently in the auto repair industry, they'll keep these facilities for some period of time to make a whole bunch of money. Then they'll turn around and sell them to individuals or to somebody else. So this rise and fall of sales and prices are what makes this all worthwhile. So people should be aware that if the management changes at the shop or the shop name changes, that it could very well be a gentleman who bought one other gentleman out, or it could easily be some investment bankers have decided to go after that area of car repair because they think it's lucrative. Do you have any idea what kind of net profit a car repair shop has, Will? Net profit, obviously, gross sales, less expenses equals net profit. So what percentage do you think there is?
I don't know. 50?
No. That would be gross because the answer is 10 or less.
Oh, wow.
So we get to keep 10 or less.
That's all.
That's all. And but that includes all the salaries, all the electricity, all the shop cars. But no matter what you've got, 10% is still the number. So then Uncle Sam's going to take 4 of those 10 cents. And so, or 3 of those 10 cents. And so you're left with 7 cents out of every dollar. So it's this idea that we make a whole lot of money is not necessarily the case, because the only income stream is from parts and labor. But in fact, you have all this other infrastructure. I walked you through our chest of drawers that has, I don't know how many scanners in it, mm-hmm. 8 or 10, and some of those are thousands and thousands of dollars. Some of those may not be used for 6 months, but you still have to have mm-hmm. them to work on a car. So I'm not asking for sympathy. I'm just kind of suggesting that if anybody believes that we make 50 cents on every dollar, nothing could be further from the
really?
Truth.
That's interesting. So I didn't know that.
It's but there's a lot of places out there. They said the other day that Apple had $12 billion worth of sales or $12 million worth of sales, and they paid no tax. Mm. I don't know who their accountants are. I'd like to hire them. But on the other hand, if they had $12 million worth of sales and they had $12 million worth of expenses, that would be it. Mm. It just wiped out any profit.
One minute.
He doesn't have to pay. I'm not an accountant. But this is what our accountants are telling mm-hmm. us, because I'm like everybody else. You know, how come he only paid $750 taxes? Well, you could, too, if you just get rid of all of this other stuff mm-hmm. and maybe lie. Not suggesting anybody's lying, but you can hide that up. Anyway, when you're fixing your car, it's really important to have a good open line of discussion with your technician or with your service manager or the service writer or the owner of the company, depending on who's the easiest to talk to. But just don't forget, talk about symptoms. Ask them if it's a guess or a fix when they call you with an estimate. Hi, Mr. Salem. This is John from ABC Auto, and I've got your car diagnosed and blah, 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 and it's going to cost $530. Is that an out-the-door price? No, sir, there's going to be shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax, which is 20% of the number.
Oh.
Okay? So, because sales tax is 10, mm-hmm. and the other two are going to eat somewhere between 8 and 10%. Okay, and so is this a guess or a fix? What do you mean? Well, if you're guessing, whose money are we guessing with, yours or mine? But if it's a fix, then I want you to tell me, oh, we are certain that this repair is going to fix the fact that every time you turn the windshield wipers on, you hear a quack underneath the hood, okay? So we're going to get rid of the chicken or the duck underneath the hood, but the fact of the matter is this is not a guess. It's a fix. That's an important conversation. Mm. And all of these, I'm held to the same standard, as you can imagine, because I'm the one that's touting that kind of a conversation. So people are going to test me, and I'm fine with that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And you know what? I'm going to go straight to the callers because we're just grateful that they called in. And Vernon, you're first.
Okay, I have a 1956 Ford Thunderbird.
Okay.
And it has a stumble from a dead stop.
Okay. And does it do it cold and hot?
Yes.
Okay. So a stumble for everybody else is you hit the throttle, there's a delay, it feels like that the engine falls on its face, and then all of a sudden the engine comes alive. Close?
Right. If I push the accelerator down all the way, it's completely stopped. The engine conks out.
Okay, okay. Will it do 60, 70 miles an hour on the road?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm asking you these questions because if it'll do 50, 60, 70 miles an hour on the highway, then it has fuel supply. Okay, so I'm going to eliminate the fact that the fuel pump's bad, because if the fuel pump was 50% capable, then you'd only go, instead of 100, you'd do 50 miles an hour, and you'd run out of power at 50. The accelerator pump is a leather skirted thing about the size of a dime. And when you first touch the throttle, you open up the butterflies, and when you do that, there's a little bit of, because we need a fuel to get us going from to like that. So the accelerator pump gives us a squirt of fuel to help in the transition between the idle circuit and the run circuit. And so, I ask you if it does it cold and hot, and here's why. The choke, a choke on a cold morning will beat, it will take the symptom away because the choke is there and the idle's higher. And you said it happens in both hot and cold. That tells me it's not going to be choke-related, and I needed to know that. So this really isn't that hard. It does it all the time, you said, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a garage that you patronize that you like?
No, I have one I go to.
Okay, that's fair enough. I'm not going to go any further. Where do you live in the part of town? What part of town do you live in?
Northwest. I'm in Sun City West.
Okay. Thunderbird Auto is up there in the Northwest, and Tom Fletcher sold that facility a year ago. He's not on my list of good shops because he doesn't have the qualifications with respect to time and business. But I am told by a variety of people that he does a good job.
You're talking about the one on Thunderbird or the one in Surprise?
No, the one in Surprise. Well, the one on Thunderbird, he owned both of them. He sold both of them. So you could go to either one. You could go to the one on Surprise or you could go to the one in Thunderbird.
Okay, well, the one in Surprise put a new carburetor and a new fuel pump on it 2 years ago. And I've had this problem the whole time.
Okay. We need to wait until we get until we fix it. Then we can determine on who you're going to go to talk to about this continuing problem. But if that's going to be a conversation you want to have, I think it would be wise for you to give them a second chance at the car. It sounds like this. You did some work. I had a hesitation. When I touched the gas, the engine fell on its face, and then sometimes it came alive. On a hard punch all the way to the floor, it just died. I brought it in, and you did a carburetor and a fuel pump. I've had the problem since then. I'm a little remiss from bringing it back, but it's not my daily driver. So I would like for you to go look at it again. And if you're going to spend any of my money, you need to let me know. But right now, what you've done hasn't worked. And I have the same problem that I had before. Does that sound like something you can pull off?
Maybe.
Okay.
That accelerator pump, is that inside the carburetor?
It is. But the accelerator pump, it just helps you in the transition. Idle circuit, the butterflies are closed, and we're just dripping fuel through two very small holes to keep the engine alive. When we step on the throttle, all of a sudden we need to go from a trickle to a stream. And the accelerator pump gives the engine a little squirt of fuel to help in the transition from 600 RPM to 800 RPM or from 600 RPM to 1,000 RPM. It just helps that transition. If you want to go back, you can. The only other option you have is take it to somewhere else, show them the repair bill that you've already paid for, ask them what their diagnostic fee is to fix this problem. If you want to come in closer to town, I can send you to a couple guys I know can fix this.
Where are they located?
38th Avenue and Indian School. And that's Harker's Automotive, H-A-R-K, Harker's. I know Bob can fix this. He has gray hair just like I do. We both have gray hair coming out of our noses. We know that car as good as anybody does. Keep in mind, we all got our start, you know, in 1960s, late 60s, early 70s. We've already walked with those cars. We've seen the transition from no computers all the way to Apple and Bill Gates and Windows. We understand all that. So I think if you drop down to 38th Avenue in Indian School and went and talked to Bob, Ellen is his wife. She's at the front counter. I'm quite sure he could fix that for you. I'm 100% sure he can fix that for you.
Okay.
All right?
I have a question on the heat gauge. It runs.
Yes, sir.
Quite beyond center. And you said the new cars are supposed to do that, but should this older car do that?
I want the older car to do that. That's new technology. Let me explain. When does water boil? I hope you know.
12.
Okay, bingo. When we put coolant in it, it won't boil or vaporize till 280, 300, okay? That's why we mix 50-50 with coolant. 50-50 coolant with water is because we're going to raise the boiling point of the... otherwise, it boils at 220. People used to run their cars real cold. We never boiled the water out of the oil. We never got the oil up above 212 degrees where we can burn the water off of it. So we had sludge. We've had sludge since I started working on cars in the 60s. We had sludge all the way to the middle 1990s. And the sludge was a killer. We never got cars into high mileage because the sludge looked like chocolate ice cream throughout the engine that could be a half an inch to an inch deep. Once we took the thermostat up to 195 and we started running the car over 210 and to 220, poof, sludge went away. No more. Gone. So in your car, all of what I've just described to you is backward compatible. So we can put a little hotter thermostat in there, but I want your car to run between half and three quarter. I want it to run there. And if you can make it run there, that car will run better. It'll get better fuel economy. You'll have less engine wear. You'll have all kinds of problems that are going to go away just because you run the engine a little hotter. Here's hot. Hot is 260. That's where the red zone's at. So you get up into the 260 mark, you got to shut the key off and call a tow truck. But 220, that's where I want it to run. That makes sense?
Well, I'm older than you, so I'm used to having it down around the middle.
I know, but you can do that if you want. Every time you shut it off, you develop a tablespoon of water. Every time you start it up, then that tablespoon mixes with the oil. And that keeps going. Pretty soon you've got a whole bunch of water and a lot more oil. That water and oil equals sludge. So you don't ever boil it until you get it at 212. 212 is where we turn water to a vapor, and then the engine consumes the vapor. So that's how it works. Anyway, good luck to you. Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And Nick, if you'd stay right there, you'll be my first caller on the other side of this break. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Let me take care of some business. Oh, I'm not. I'm going to go to Nick just like I promised. Nick, thank you for holding on the break. How can I help you?
Okay. Two comments. One about nitrogen, the reason it's used in racing is because it's much more stable as far as heat expansion, so your tire pressure will maintain a better, you know, range than using outside air or cow flatulism or whatever. You know, as far as for street cars, it's a scam. I agree.
Okay. And you know, that's even an argument, and I don't have a side on the temperature because there's experts on both sides of that issue that I respect. I'm not going to spend my time deciding that, but let me tell you what I did do. I haul horse trailers a lot. And yep. Not too long ago, I went up to Payson, and I noticed the right side tires were 20 degrees hotter than the left. You know what the tire crown is? It's where the sidewall meets the tread. That's where I'm going,
yep.
Okay? So my wife laughed at me.
I heard that one.
Yep,
Mark.
Yep.
And
you're exactly right. What I didn't tell during that period of time is that we put nitrogen on one side and air on the other, and my guys did it, but they didn't tell me which one it was. Well, when I got back, I said to them, ha, 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 one of them was different. And Renee said, no, that's BS. It's because of the sun, because on our way home, it turned it around. So I didn't experience any kind of a difference in tire temperature between the two trailer tires that had nitrogen and the two trailer tires that had compressed air. But I'm going along with you. I don't have enough of an experience to know whether that's more stable. But I can tell you this much. I rarely see more than 10 to 15 degrees temperature, and it's all related to load. So if I drive my Camaro from here to Phoenix or from here to Payson, there's nothing. It's going to be temperature, and it's not going to do, even if she's driving and she's drag racing everybody up and down the hills. So
okay,
I agree.
One other thing. A while back, I was reading my Toyota 2006 Tacoma owner's manual just for poofs and giggles, and it tells me that running premium gasoline will increase the power. And I thought, what? You know, so because I'm an old school drag racer guy, you know.
Okay.
So just for fun, I'm running up the Payson, and got an empty tank. So I loaded up with premium. I could not believe the difference. It was amazing.
Okay. Let me tell you. let me change your question. Mark, is there a difference between regular gas and unleaded or premium gas? Okay. Let's start with that question.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you that we measure the flame. The explosion is measured in milliseconds, and my cohort is that's a thousandth of a second. So, so we talk about a thousandth of a second longer. So the analogy I use is regular, and this is just a way to explain it. I'm gonna explain a big difference, but it's not. When you pop a balloon with a pen, or if you take the balloon and just let it go where it goes all over the room, okay? The popping balloon is 1 millisecond, and as this balloon flies around the room, it's 5 or 10 milliseconds. But in reality, that's just an explanation. The burn on regular is about 1, 2, 3 milliseconds shorter than the premium. The premium burns slower, but we're talking about a thousandth of a second. Now, yeah, with the newer model cars in your Tacoma,
2 minutes.
It's just going to watch the timing, and if it starts pinging, it's going to back the timing off. And right, we're only talking about a degree. I can't explain why you've experienced those good results, but we've tested this hypothesis so many times with respect to both cars that don't have knock sensors and cars that do have knock sensors. And I'm a trained expert for Chevron and Valvoline, and I've been through all their schools and all that kind of stuff. Chevron won't admit that that their premium has 1 or 2 milliseconds of explosion longer than their regular. But there are cars out there that start with a higher compression ratio, like Jaguars and Maseratis and some of those Porsches, and especially if they have a blower or a turbo on them. So those are best served with a higher octane gas. But I have a Camaro that's got a 6 liter with a supercharger on it, and I can drive it both with regular and super, and I personally can't tell the difference, and I don't have knocking, so I know that I'm knocking off a degree or so when the computer determines the ping.
I mean, I've been around forever like you, and I was amazed because I've never had a vehicle that, performed so different. I mean, it was noticeable, very noticeable, because it's something I drove it for 180,000 miles by myself and drove it all the time. And, when you drive a car like that all the time, you know every time you start it up and drive, you can feel something different, if there's a difference.
And I would like you to continue, if you're going to, may I suggest you also see if fuel economy matches the performance. So if you're going to bounce back and forth.
It did. Okay. No, it did.
Okay.
That thing was so constant at 20 miles per gallon. AC on, AC off. But, it didn't matter. 20 miles per gallon. It was so crazy. But I just was amazed at the difference.
Okay. And I can't possibly argue with what you said, because your science is better than my hypothesis. So, I'm sure there's people out there that are going to say, I can tell the difference with regular Supra. Well, my wife had a Jaguar that it was called an XJ, and it had a 4.0 liter V8 with a supercharger on it. And we used to constantly... Yeah, it's a great car. We used to constantly fill up one another's cars to see if we could do it. Well, your best bet's 50-50. That's all there is. That's the best you could get. And neither one of us, we both admitted at the end of the day that we couldn't tell whether that thing had 10 gallons of regular in it or 10 gallons of super in it. We just couldn't tell. But, of course, like you say, it was a rocket ship to begin with anyway. So, anyway, Nick, thank you for holding over the break for me. I appreciate that. 602-508-0960. We have open lines available, and we got 20 more minutes of show, so you're almost guaranteed to get in. Again, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I'm going to go to the callers because that's what we promised at the very beginning, and I'll turn off my speaker so Gil won't have to yell at me about the echo that he just heard. And Andrew, you're first. How can I help you?
Yeah, I was just wondering. You were talking about the oil changes and whatnot. I had a Chevy Suburban, and I ran from Lancaster, Texas, down to Austin, then back up to Richardson. And I did that every day with running computer parts. Now, a mechanic came out, and he asked me, he goes, what are you doing? And I go, what are you talking about? You got about 6,000 miles in between oil changes here. I think we're at about 5,500. Take a look at this. The oil's crystal clean. There's nothing wrong with it. What are you doing? And I go, well, I haven't changed it or anything. Oh, I'm burning premium. I only burn like 92 octane. Maybe 93 if I can find it. Most expensive gas I can find. It burns cleaner. It's not a dirty burn. And he goes, keep doing that.
Okay.
The engine of this truck, it loves it.
Okay.
It's more expensive for you, granted, but...
All right. Well, let me... go ahead.
Yeah.
Let me comment.
I was going to say,
okay?
Can you explain that? Yeah.
Well, there's some real discrepancies here. First of all, we want the oil to darken up as it picks up carbon and contaminants. So the golden hue oil at 6,000 miles, in my opinion, after working on cars since 1968, can't be any science behind it. It just can't be. It's kind of like you getting off the oil field and taking a shower and plugging the bathtub up and the water being clean as when you started. It's just not that way. The second thing is the amount of burn time as opposed to a balloon popping and then you let go of the balloon and just let it go all over the room. The amount of burn time has nothing to do with the oil contamination. All of that is happening between the piston and the head. And the only thing, and there's rings, a compression ring, a wipe dry ring, and a top compression, wipe dry, and something else. I'll remember as soon as I get off the air. But anyway, those three rings keep all the fuel and the explosion away from the engine and the oil. So I can't explain what you're talking about, but I can tell you this much. I was just in a court case not too long ago, and the person testified that he had checked the oil after 7,500 miles, and it had a golden hue to it. I had my guys pull every single sample of every single car that we changed the oil in for the last year. And then we had to establish how many miles that oil had on it. So I took 30 baby jars full of oil to court, and I said, here's one that's 1,000 miles old, here's one that's 6,000 miles old, here's one that's 8,000 miles old, and we've been able to document when the last oil change was on all these cars, and there's not a single one of them that has a golden hue to it. So, and I'm an oil expert. I've been trained by Valvoline and Chevron. So I can't explain but I can tell you this much. I like it that you're driving a Suburban and you're going from one long place to the other. That has a lot of benefits. If you have a horse and you go out and run him every day and he works cattle every day, he's going to be a whole lot better than the horse that sits in the stall and gets ridden for 2 hours on a Saturday. So your Suburban's getting exercised like all cars should be exercised. But I can't explain the oil issue, but I can and respectfully do disagree with the idea that regular gasoline and super gasoline are going to have anything to do with the performance of the oil or the color of the oil. That's a hard jump for me to make. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was just saying that the 89 is just burns a little bit more dirty than the 93. 93 burns a lot cleaner.
Yeah, but the 89 had fuel injection in it. Yeah, it had fuel injection. It had an overdrive transmission. I had an 89 with a 454. Heck, I put a blower on it. So
it was a 99 Suburban that I was using, so maybe it's just like different nowadays. I mean, you know.
Well, again, they put fuel injected in 19 that was 1890.
Well, I know it had fuel injected.
I understand that. Well, I mean, that was kind of the big thing. That's the line we draw in the sand. We went from carburetors to fuel injection. Things changed. Timing changed. Fuel changed. Everything changed. EGRs changed. Every aspect of the motor changed when we went from carburetor to fuel injection. So that's kind of the line in the sand. But, Andrew, I'm going to take you at your word. I'm not going to argue with you. And thank you very much for calling. Steve, you're up next.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you.
Good, good. Hey, I've got this 81 Jeep. I had a massive fuel leak back in the tank. Took it in. They dropped the tank and found the flex lines and stuff. Kind of punky, replaced all that. Well, now, for the life of me, I cannot put gas in this stupid thing. I wondered if you could explain what's going on. I pull up to the pumps. Doesn't matter where I go.
Okay.
I'm standing there for 30 minutes, and the thing clicks and clicks and clicks. Just won't take it.
I can tell you. There's no vent. It has to be a vented system. As you push gas in, we got to push vapor and air out. So somewhere along the line, they didn't put the vent in, or the filler neck they put on didn't have a vent, or the gas tank doesn't have a vent either. We need a vent in the filler neck, which is the metal part you stick the nozzle in. We need a vent there, or we need a vent on top of the tank. But if there's no vent on the top of the tank and there's no filler neck on it, or the filler neck is wrong, then there's no way you're going to get fuel in there at a very fast rate, because you're sending the liquid in, and we got to get air out. And the problem with you sending fuel in at I'm exaggerating here. You're sending fuel in at 200 miles an hour. It's going to spit back on you hard, as you already know. So it didn't happen. This didn't happen before they did their work, right?
No, not at all. But it was leaking gas so bad that it had lots of vents.
Okay, I want you to be nice because you'll get a lot better with nice. You just say to them, and you know what you could do if you wanted to be dastardly, okay? You call the shop and you say to them, I got my car at another place, and it keeps kicking back when I fuel it up, and they said something about a vent. Is it necessary to have a vent in your tank or in the apparatus of your fuel system in order so that the gas doesn't spill out at you? And the guy on the phone says, yes, it is. And so you wait a week or two. You go back.
Yeah,
in.
I don't think I'm going to have a problem with the shop when I take it back. I mean, they're real good folks. It's
okay.
I was trying to understand what phenomenon I'm seeing. How does the gas nozzle know?
Because liquid's coming back and shutting off the nozzle because you're shoving fuel in and it's going into a big air pillow and the air pillow just pushes the fuel back out at you. So we need gas in and air out, and you don't have any air out. This is a problem my guys have done before. One of them pinched a return line.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, no. We put a fuel tank in not too long ago on this reconstructed big block Ford, and we pinched the neck. He had too long of a hose in there. So when we put the tank in, it pinched the neck. The guy comes back and says, da-da-da. Okay, fine. So put it up in the air. We three or four of us get around it. We look up there, shine a flashlight up there. We look over at Tom and say, take a look at that. And he goes, oh. So he took the bottom off the tank. He cut off about 2 inches. He put it back on. He put a clamp on it. We went and put $20 worth of gas in it, and it was done. It was our fault. But I'm real familiar with what you're talking about, and I'm just telling you there's a problem with the vent in your fuel system. So
perfect. No, that's real helpful. And yeah, these guys will look after me.
Okay.
No problem there. But, yeah, I just was trying to understand what was going on. Yeah. I'm 30 minutes at the
phone. Well, and I wrecked my truck not too long ago, my Dodge truck. Well, I didn't. One of my employees scraped the left front fender off my dually off the corner of the building. And so I had to drive it to Phoenix Body Works in North Phoenix, and I needed to make sure that I had gas. But the problem is the filler neck had been knocked off and bent. So I did it 10 miles at a time because now I can't vent the fuel. And so I do 10 miles every day to run out again, and I pull off the side of the road, and I'd wait for a little while and stuff. So when I got there, I said, make sure you replace the filler neck because clearly, and I stopped thinking I was running out of gas, and I kept adding fuel to it, but it was click, 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 click. Well, the problem was is the vent system was down, and I was trying to fill up a big air pillow and it wasn't going to work. So I'm glad you're going to be nice. I'm glad you like them, and now we'll test their ability to fix their mistake.
They are the best shop in the valley.
Okay, good. I say you stick with them. All righty. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. There's a couple of other good shops in the valley too. Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. I've known Tom for a long time. We are brothers of different mothers, and we're both a little ornery, and we both think we know everything there is to know about cars, and we both don't like to argue with our technicians, but we both have long-term technicians. But Tom really does do a good job, really, really does. He's a good guy, and he knows business real well, and if you got an old car, or if you got an old car that your dad had and now you want to restore it, he does that and does that really well, especially if you're going to upgrade it. So if you have a car that had a six-cylinder and now you want to put a V8 fuel-injected, sequential fuel-injected with no distributor and put a overdrive transmission behind it, he's your guy. So that's 40th Street and Glendale, or 40th Street and Greenway. But if you need an oil change or a cooling system flush, or if you need somebody to figure out why when you turn on the car in the morning that the radio station changes, then he can do that as well. The other guy out there that's really good is Action Auto. Action Auto is up on I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. I've known Tom since 1983. These guys don't get personal endorsements unless I can promise you they're going to do a good job. And here's how I back up my promise. I will pay you $5,000 if they're told to do something to fix your car and they won't. So let's say that they have a Better Business Bureau complaint, and the Better Business Bureau investigates it, and they say to shop, you need to give them back $2,100. Well, if the shop doesn't give you back $2,100, I will, up to $5,000. My cap is $5,000. That covers transmissions and stuff. So then I kick the shop off my list, and I put you back the way I found it. So this isn't something that is a passion. This isn't something that we do for fun. These are guys that have already signed off on this, and here's what's really important. I've never, since 1988, had to pull a dollar out of my pocket. Every one of the guys that's been on my best car repair shops list has always performed admirably. Now, there's been a couple of times where we have to hash it out a little bit and come to a middle ground and stuff like that. That's happened twice, and since 1988. But I'm saying to you in written terms on my website, if you have a problem with one of my shops and someone of authority tells the shop to make a refund or give you money back and the shop doesn't do it, then I will write the check for a maximum of $5,000. So I really mean what I say when these guys are the best of the best, because they are the best of the best. Another good guy I can tell you now is Billy at 25th Street Auto. Billy knows more about cars than many of the people I know. He's just been around the block. He's an old drag racer, which doesn't really mean that transitions to fixing the air conditioning on a Ford LTD. Okay, there's a difference there. But if you understand spark and fuel and compression and exhaust and all that kind of stuff, then you can usually fix anything. And Billy's a good guy for that as well. You talk about other guys that are like Thompson's over in Mesa. He's a great guy. So if you go to MarkSalem.com, you can look at my list of good repair shops. And when you look at that list, just find somebody in your area. But if you've already got a shop and you love the shop and you like the shop and you don't want to change the shop, then keep them. Because people like you that do that, that say that, they're very valuable to us that have a clientele that's repeatable. They keep coming back, and that's an honor for those of us that have been around a long time. So anyway, Mark's my email address is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com, and you're welcome to send me an email about any subject, and I'll do my best to help you. We had Will here that was talking about defibrillators and what's that other thing?
Pacemaker.
Gosh, I can't put the two of them. And if you want a referral from Will, and here's the question. Will, who would you have work on your mother's heart? Who would you have work on your wife's heart? Well, he can give you that menu of people that he would fix, but you're going to have to go through me at mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Will, I know you're in your car right now, so thank you very much for spending your time with me, but I'm right and you're wrong. Auto mechanics have a tougher time than doctors, and I know you didn't defend my position, but we'll talk about it next week.